Okay, comrades. I am delighted to introduce the last section in the 101. And there's going to be a bunch of overlap with some of the stuff that's been mentioned in previous sessions, but I'm going to flesh it out in way more detail. And so some of the stuff around why we organise, what a revolutionary party does in a revolution, all of that stuff, I'm going to flesh out. And I want to start by kind of setting the basis for anyone who was kind of sleeping through the rest of the conference, about what kind of revolution we are fighting for, because it matters. Like, the kind of organization that we build is an organization that is based on the working class organizing themselves, working class agency, to take over society at the point of production, restructure society from the point of democracy. Production, restructure that society democratically, and then smash the capitalist state. That's the important last step in that process. Use the Red Army, the armed working class, to go and get rid of the capitalist state. That is important distinction between socialism and anarchism, and that is important to say because it's going to relate to some of the stuff I say later. And that process of working class revolution is the kind of creative potential that gives hope to humanity, that gives the possibility of a society without want, a possibility of society where everyone has the things that they need, the food, the medicine, the education, the things that they need to live, to grow up, which is something that a lot of kids in our world, particularly in the global south, don't get to do. But not only to live happily and healthily, but to thrive and to contribute to society, all of the kind of every kind of creative and smart thing that they can contribute to society, and creates a potential for a society that I cannot even imagine, even though I spend a lot of time looking at revolutions and thinking about what is possible if we use the productive resources for the good of humanity. That is the kind of vision that we are fighting for, and that is the vision that you get glimpses of in revolution after revolution after revolution. And if comrades have been to some of the sessions, and I assume you have, over the conference, you will have seen some of those glimpses, whether it is Russia, where women are liberated from the home by collective kitchens and given the rights to abortion and the rights to divorce and the right to do whatever the fuck they want, in a society that was so backward before the revolution, that women still labored like they had hundreds of years beforehand. Or whether it's Manama, where you have the rebel students and workers standing up and fighting for themselves. People who their talk on Friday night, where the woman textile worker said, "These hands have previously only been used to make garments, and now they are fighting." Like, that kind of like potential of humanity is the thing that we are fighting for. Now, a lot of the stuff I'm going to say will be based on 100 more years of watching revolutions spring up and be defeated. And so I'm going to talk to begin with about why we need a socialist organisation during a revolution, because that is crucially important. Then I'm going to talk about why we need to be organised today, why it matters that we're organised before the revolution breaks out and what that means. And then I'm going to talk lastly about what we do, some of the kind of nitty-gritty of what it means to be a member of Socialist Alternative. Okay. So let's start with why we need a socialist party during an organisation. And I'm going to list three reasons and explain them. And I'm going to list them in the order of importance. And this will be controversial potentially, and you'll see why. So firstly, I think the most important reason we need a socialist organisation during a revolution is that the working class is uneven. Some workers are more politically clear than others. Some workers are backwards. And so to overcome that unevenness, we need a socialist organisation. And I'll go on to explain that. The second reason I think that it is the most important is that we are not the only actors in a revolution. The working class is not the only actors. Revolutionary organisations are not the only actors. Actually, the reason we have seen revolution after revolution after revolution defeated, particularly in the advanced capitalist countries, is because reformist forces are involved, and reformist forces are much more about trying to stabilise the situation and take lead the working class back to a stable capitalism than they are about overthrowing it. And the third reason, and like I said, order of priority, that we need a revolutionary organisation is that the ruling class is organised, they are strong, they have weapons, they have all sorts of forces that attempt to smash the working class back into their boxes, put them down, etc. And I'll talk about how a revolutionary organisation relates to that. Just so let's start on uneven consciousness. You can also call it contradictory consciousness, and I prefer the term contradictory consciousness, and I'll explain. So one of the foundational understandings of the working class is that the working class is a collective body of people that labours together to create what is needed in society. Labours on the means of production. We've all heard these kind of things before. So the working class has, as part of their understanding of the world, that collective understanding of I work with you, we work together, that kind of stuff. You see a lot of kind of humanities kind of niceness come out in that that side of the kind of contradiction. The other side of the contradiction consciousness of the working class is that the ideas that dominate capitalist society are the ideas of the capitalist class. The things that the media tell us, the things that you learn in school, all of these things are about how ordinary people cannot run the world, how we're all isolated individuals and you better kind of take what you need before someone else kind of like, you know what I mean? Like those kind of ideas of kind of competition and powerlessness. And so different sections of workers have different kind of balance of these forces, these contradictory consciousnesses in their heads. So, for example, you look at a bunch of revolutionary situations and the more politically conscious workers are often those who are in large cities, often the major capital. They are often the ones who have some other form of oppression going on. So they're often racial minorities. They're people, and they're often people who work in the more powerful sections of the working class. So historically, we've seen metal workers during the war, the people who are kind of making the ammunitions, power workers, transport workers, all of these are often more politically conscious than rural workers or people who work individually or what have you. And so there's a couple of ramifications of that. And I'll go through them. So firstly, one of the things that it's worth knowing is the working class can move into struggle and be fighting against the capitalist class in the way that the working class does by going on strike, possibly restarting production under their own control without really kind of recognising what it is they're doing or the potential that that has to transform the world. One of the reasons of a revolutionary party is to kind of firstly point that out, like, look at what you are doing. You are restarting production. This is how we will change the world. So I'll give you the example. And sometimes workers can restart production just kind of like, of course you would. I'll give you the example of Chile in 72. The workers in Chile go on strike, and particularly the truck drivers go on strike. And if you remember kind of a map of Chile, Chile is a long country, and trucks are pretty important for getting goods around, things like food into the cities. Truck drivers go on strike, but cities still need food. But the truck drivers don't want to drive for their bosses because they're on strike. They're trying to win a political demand. And so they drive the trucks, but they drive them under their own control or the control of the cordones, which is the workers' council, the name for a workers' council in Chile. And so you have the working class kind of taking elements of the means of production and using them for themselves in that situation. And part of the reason for a revolutionary organisation is to spread that, is to make sure that more and more sections of society, the working class takes control, reorganises, etc. It's worth pointing out at this point that individuals can be really important in this kind of process. So I want to jump to Poland, and I'll give you the name of Alana Pinskowska. My Polish is terrible. But she was a nurse on a ship, and she was part of a strike that happened in the Leningrad shipyards in the Polish Revolution. And what happened is that this shipyard went on strike in protection of one of their union leaders who the government was attempting to or the company was attempting to fire. Same thing. And a couple of days, this strike spread. More and more shipyards, factories were coming out on strike. And the government kind of freaked out. And they're like, okay, we will reinstate this worker. Like, you win. Here you go. He gets his job back. And this worker was also one of the union leaders. And he said, we've won, comrades. Go back to work. We've won. And Elena played a central role. The workers started to walk back into the factory. We've won our strike, whatever. She got up on the gates and she started shouting. She said, comrades, we have won here in this shipyard. But what about all of those workers that went out in support of us? If we go back to work now, we will be selling them out. What about their demands? What about the protest movement we have started? And she won. The gates were closed. Work did not restart in that shipyard. And the very next day, she was part of founding Solidarność, which was a trade union. It was a workers' organisation that was a part of dual power in Russia for nearly a year. Individuals matter. She is just one person that we know of, like, that has gone down in history. Every revolutionary situation has a couple of people like that who, in the situation of workers moving into struggle, push it forward in their individual workplaces and individual street corners, in like university meetings, whatever, are arguing the thing that points towards workers' power at every step and extending workers' power over society that is necessary to spread the revolution, that is necessary to deepen it, and that is necessary to defend it. Okay. Another thing that is necessary because of the uneven or contradictory consciousness of the working class is not only that extension and proof in real life that the working class can run society, can make things better for everyone, can liberate the oppressed, all of that. The other thing that is necessary is that one thing that happens time and time again when workers' struggles get to a point of workers' power, dual power, so you have a working class state developed and you have the ruling class state still remaining, still existing. When you get to that point, one of the things that tends to happen is that the most class-conscious workers get super excited and they see the power that they have in society and they say, yes, this is it. This is the time that we win. Let's go smash the capitalist state. And this happened in Russia. It happened in Germany. It's normally the kind of, like I said, the most advanced workers in the major city who are like, yeah, I can see we can like win this. And they have a too early insurrection. Because the working class is, like I said, a collective class. And the working class is a class that can only take power consciously. The working class as a whole must be for the working class taking power. They must understand what that means. They must be able to defend it. They must be part of the process of the working class taking control of society and smashing the capitalist class. And so what happens when a section of the working class acts too soon is that they can be crushed by the forces of the state. And so this is what happened in Germany. We talked in the last session about the defeat of the German Revolution. A decisive point in that revolution is the deaths of Rosa Luxemburg and Liebknecht. They were part of a premature insurrection in the capital. It was early in the revolution. The workers in Germany, across Germany, really wanted workers' power, and they tried to take power too early in the capital. This led to a slaughtering, including some of the key leaders. And it meant that the most clear workers were no longer part of the struggle because they had lost their lives too early. And this was a kind of battering ram against the working class and the revolution for the rest of the time. The time, if you think about the different example of Russia, one of the key things that happens in the Russian Revolution is that, again, the workers in Petrograd are like, yeah, it's time, let's have an insurrection. And the Bolshevik Party is central to saying, comrades, you are correct, we do need an insurrection, you are right, but stop. Your goal now is to go and patiently explain. You must go and convince the rest of the working class why the working class needs to take power to settle the demands that you have been fighting for. And that is a both reflection of contradiction consciousness. It's also a role the revolutionary party needs to play in a revolutionary situation. Okay. The second reason to move on to reformist forces. We've talked about them a bit over the conference, but it's worth firstly saying that during any revolutionary situation, they don't act like the Labour Party acts like today. They're not Anthony Albanese or Bill Shorten who's like, maybe we can have like a little bit of something better. That's not how they are. Like a reformist force in a revolution says, we're for the revolution, comrades. We are the best fighters for revolution. Revolution, yeah, let's have socialism. And then they say, but wait, comrades, but wait, maybe it's not right to have that strike. Maybe it's not right to have that protest. Just wait, comrades. Let's have a revolution, but let's go home and think about it. Let's delay the situation until all of the momentum of the working class dissipates and the ruling class can come and smash it. Like, that is the role of reformist forces. They act like they're revolutionaries and then they kind of undermine workers' power at every step. And then when things have kind of been undermined to a point, they step in to put themselves at the head of a new state or what have you. And it can be like fast, it can be slow, but it's really, it is the role of reformist forces. It's the key reason that the German Revolution goes down to defeat and every revolution since then pretty much. I was going to give you the example of the Iranian Revolution in this. The Iranian Revolution that overthrew the Shah, was this amazing kind of outpouring of working class radicalization. A comrade mentioned in one of the sessions the other day around the environment, he said that during the Iranian Revolution, all of the workers who worked in the nuclear industry voted to shut down their industry because they were like, we don't want to do things that destroy the environment anymore. We hate uranium. Like, we're not doing it anymore. Let's do something socially useful. That is a kind of transformation that was happening in Iran. They created shoras and elected working class delegates and representations to the shoras, which is what workers' councils are called in Iranian. It was this kind of incredible expression of working class art and culture and like beautifulness. And then the ruling class got their act together and they sent home from exile a political leader called Kalumi, who said, I am the face of the revolution. I am the democracy that you have been waiting for. And because the working class didn't have any independent organisations, there was lots of people who disagreed with that. There was lots of people who said, that wasn't what I was fighting for. I was fighting for liberation. Because people weren't organised in a way that they could actually confront this new reformist power. They didn't have any organisations that could push back and keep extending the revolution after he told them it was over. Actually, reformist forces need to be defeated. They need to be defeated in battle. You need to argue with them. You need to have someone on in every workplace, on every street corner, in like with publications, with political ideas, and cohered to say to working class people, no, that's not what we're fighting for. If we do, we can keep, you know what I mean? Like, you need to be able to defeat those forces both politically and in practice by extending the revolution. To go to the next reason, force. the ruling class has it. They have lots of it. They have big guns. They have tanks. They have all sorts of things that they use in attempt to put down revolutions. They also have all sorts of like insidious things they use to put down revolutions, like the media, the courts, all of these kind of things. And those ideas of the ruling class are part of the contradiction of working class consciousness, which makes them way more insidious. To counter that, you need revolutionary organisations. So you need to do the debates, the arguments, all of that, the things I said, extend workers' power. But you also need to extend workers' control over society. Comrades have used in previous discussions the example of the Russian Revolution and the attempted coup that was defeated by the Bolsheviks. And I want to expand on that a little bit because I think it's a really important political point about how you defeat the overwhelming power of the capitalist class. So the generals in Russia are attempting to crush the revolution. They're sending troops that they drew from the peasantry into Petrograd to crush the most militant sections of the working class. The Bolsheviks move into action and they say, we never supported the president, the Menshevik president who's currently ruling Russia, but we are prepared to defend him because we don't support this coup and we are going to defeat this coup. And the great quote is, we will support the president like a rope supports the hanging man. We're going to defeat the coup so we can defeat him next. And it's a great strategy and it's very successful. What they do to organize that is they use the power of the working class to defeat the coup. So the first thing that they do is that the train workers like divert tracks so that the troops who are on the trains can kind of never get to Petrograd. They mess with the communication lines of the army. So then it was telegrams. Now it'd be internet or what have you. But that's not all they do. They also get some of the most class-conscious, articulate agitators of the Bolsheviks, and they walk out of Petrograd. Well, they walk out of Petrograd and they walk to where the troops are camping because they can't get on the trains. And they agitate to them. They say, you are peasants. They are sending you to cross our workers' revolution, but our workers' revolution is the thing that is going to liberate you. Our position is all land to the peasants. Like, don't do this. Like, they're trying to pit one section of the oppressed against the other. And the coup melts into air. All of the peasants, fuck this. This isn't what I signed up for. And they get up and they walk home. Like, the coup can't happen because of the actions of the working class and the political clarity and agitation of the revolutionary sections of the working class. That is a necessary part of how you defeat the political violence of the ruling class. And it must be led by a political organisation that is committed to defeating the ruling class, aka revolutionary organisation. Okay, I'm going to switch from during a revolution to now, because it's a really important point that has been learnt revolution after revolution after revolution. It is almost too late to organise during a revolutionary situation, which is not to say that there won't be a mass influx of radical workers into revolutionary organisations during a revolution. That's definitely a feature of it. There may be different kind of twists and turns revolutionary organisations make, mergers with groups that are split into the left, like maybe expelling wings that don't quite agree with the revolution. There's all sorts of things that can happen to revolutionary organisations within a revolution. But it is crucial that you have organised before the revolution starts so that you can be in a position to do all of those very complex things I've talked about. It sounds easy when I say it here, hey. Like, it's a Monday morning in Melbourne, I say you've got to defeat the political violence of the ruling class. You're like, yeah, of course you do. But that is a very complex situation in a revolutionary situation. The arguments that the reformers make, very complex. The arguments that workers have in their heads coming from a lifetime of powerlessness under capitalism, very complex. to be in a position where you can do that, where you can have in workplace after workplace after workplace, political agitators who have some sense about how you get up and make an argument and win people to an action, to a political understanding. That takes practice. Most of us don't get that practice under capitalism. Most of us do not get trained on how to agitate. Actually, being part of a revolutionary organization is the way you get that practice. And that is one of the reasons that we are organized now. That is one of the reasons that we're involved in campaign groups. That is one of the reasons we have branch meetings and we get up and we say political points. That is one of the reasons we do reading groups. That is one of the reasons that we train our members to be active political agents and fighters and lead people, because that practice needs to happen way before you get into conflict with all these other different sorts of forces. You don't get trained to do that in capitalism, you get trained to do that in a revolutionary organization. The second reason is that society is incredibly complex. To understand the dynamics of political ideas, of the economics and political history of a country, all of the political understandings, the distortions of Stalinism, all of the failings of anarchism, the confusions of liberalism, to understand all of these things requires political theory and political understanding and history and reading and all of these things. The reason we organize now is that we want to build an organization of political clarity. Now, that doesn't mean that every single member needs to have political clarity on everything. It would be impossible for every single one of us to be politically clear on every revolution in history and every topic and everything. The reason you have a political organization is that within your organization, different individuals can have political clarity on there, and then you can come together to have political clarity as a whole, to have democratic debates and discussions and arguments that actually flesh out what is happening in our world. When something changes, what's happening then? You know what I mean? Like, you've got to be able to both have the history of political understanding, but then also the culture and ability to democratically debate that and make decisions in the kind of practice of a revolution to steady it. So one of the things that Social Alternative does in aid of that is put on conferences like this. We also put out a Marxist Left Review, which is my first prop, which is about contributing to the ideological understanding of how you achieve human liberation, in particular attempting to defeat the distortions of Stalinism and the confusions of liberalism. And that is one of the kind of key things that we do. We encourage all of our members to do reading groups almost continuously. There is never enough time to read everything you need to read and get to grips with all of the things you need to get to grips with. And a bunch of our members are not only involved in reading all of the books, they're involved in writing all of the books, so that we have a bunch of members who are doing historical work, political work, all sorts of work, grappling with ideas and writing them down and sharing them. That is a feature of our organisation, and that is because we want to be the clearest, most combative organisation we can possibly be. There's a bunch more other things we do. The most important thing we do is get bigger. I'm not ashamed to say it. We want to recruit more people to Marxist politics. We want there to be more revolutionaries in the world. We want there to be more people who can take up the ideas of how you actually get to a world that is not so fucking crap. And so there's a variety of ways we do that. One is our newspaper, which plays the political clarity role and attempt to recruit new people to Marxist politics. That is an essential part of our work, and selling the newspaper is an essential part of what a member does in the here and now and in a revolutionary situation. Like right now, this newspaper is a bit abstract. Some of it's abstract, some of it's more concrete. The stuff about Manama, super concrete, amazing. Some of it is kind of propagandist, the stuff about the Liberal Party. It's an attempt to talk to people who are kind of annoyed about the fucking sexism of the ruling class at the moment. Some of it's history, some of it's political ideas. When we're involved in a campaign, when we're involved in a political movement, this is also a tool to make an argument about what has to happen next. This is a tool that the revolutionary organization speaks to the mass of people and says, this is what's going on in society. This is how we get to a better kind of society. So this is a tool here and then. And it's all about convincing more and more people that their project should be smashing capitalism. We have branch meetings, which all members are part of a branch, and we go every week to discuss current events, history, all sorts of stuff, and organise our activity. It's about that political clarity, building fighters, and being organised. The thing I said about the ruling ideas dominating society, we are not immune from that. We want to be part of a revolutionary organisation that is getting to grips with society and fighting against every kind of new crap they bring up, like all of that kind of stuff. We want to be learning our history, and we want to be learning how to debate with each other, how to be confident with our political opinions, how to fight our comrade who may be slightly wrong on an issue. we want to be agitators, and that starts with within our own organisation. We do, part of that is we do public meetings to bring new people to the ideas about kind of topics they're interested in, convince them why that kind of horror that they hate about capitalism is actually capitalism and why you need to overthrow it. We do stalls to meet people, to bring them to those public meetings or things like this, or sell our newspaper. We do stalls to get a sense of what people think about issues. That's one of the things we want to know what people think. We want to get a sense of how political issues are landing in the heads of whoever it is we can like ask about that, so we have some sense of how the world is going. And we meet people at rallies. We go to rallies and we want to kind of convince people to be part of Socialist Alternative. Convincing people to be part of Socialist Alternative is probably the most important thing that we do. And I want to pause for a second and say, most people we convince to be part of Socialist Alternative are not coming from the place where they have read all of Das Kapital and they've read all about the German Revolution and they're super convinced about, like, why, you know what I mean? Like, most people who become Socialist Alternative members, including myself, are kind of got some kind of left-wing ideas about the world. Maybe they hate racism. Maybe they have some kind of criticism of the world. We meet them where they're at and we convince them on a path to a revolutionary understanding of the world. That's why we do things like intro to Marxist discussion groups. That's why we sit patiently talking about things to hours on end, because actually we think that left-wing people should engage seriously with the ideas of Marxism, and those are the people who become our cater. And then I'm going to wind up by saying, then we go outside into the world and we fight about things. So we are a central part of every campaign that happens in every city we are a part of. So here in Melbourne, that includes the refugee solidarity work and the organising of demonstrations that are purposefully confronting. We do not want there to be refugees locked up in hotels, and the only thing people do about it is cry on the streets or send letters to politicians. We want to create a political crisis that means that the hotels will not keep refugees there anymore. Why did the mantra get rid of those refugees? They were getting paid lots of money to keep them. They got rid of them because of bad publicity to be a fucking prison on the streets of Melbourne when there's people outside protesting you every day. We want to create political crises around things that fucking matter in the world. We want to be the people who are fighting the fascists. Why is there no fascist movement in Melbourne? It's not because the fascists haven't tried to organise. They try and organise all of the time. They're not the world's smartest, like, fucking, like, they keep trying. And every time they do, we are there to shout them down. You cannot join any of those organizations unless you are 100% committed to the ideas of like the worst of the fascists. Because every time they try to organize on some stuff, ooh, we're not really fascists. We're just like concerned. We're going to say, you're fucking fascists. And there's hundreds of us here and we're going to shout, you're a fascist until you like run away with your little tail behind you. Like literally I've been to demonstrations to counter the fascists and the fascists haven't even been confident to start their demonstration because there's too many of us shouting at them. That's why there's no fascist movement in Melbourne. All of our members are members of their union, whether that is a student union or whether they are workers and they are members of their trade union. So I'm a member of the Australian Education Union because I'm a teacher, and that involves organising for more kind of confidence and creativity of my workmates. I organise my sub-branch. I'm the secretary of my sub-branch, and we are part of the campaign that is currently happening in the Australian Education Union to win better paying conditions. We're currently in negotiations. Like, the AU is going to sell us out because the Labor Party is in government, and that's what the AU does when the Labor Party is in government. But we will definitely be there to argue that that shouldn't happen. Like, our members want to build rank and file organisations and political expression wherever we can, including in the student unions where a bunch of our members are elected officials and they use them to build campaigns and political struggles. I'm going to wind up there, but just to reiterate, like Social Alternative wants more people to join us. We think it's important in the long run when there is a revolution that breaks out, and we think it is important now. The more members we have, the more impact we have. The more people who are confident to argue and to fight and to get their heads around history and to debate out the like intricacies of all sorts of political situations, the better position we will be in then and the better position we are in now.